The following episode contains sensitive material, including firsthand accounts of sexual abuse and domestic violence. Listener discretion is advised. What's your secret? Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. My name is Ace Fanning. I know that I left you guys hanging last week, so I won't take up too much of your time, but I just want to say that if by chance you are listening to this episode because you have someone in your life who is struggling with addiction, I want you to hear two things. First, I am sorry. I found myself getting frustrated with this girl that I have never met, telling me a story from her past. So I can't even begin to imagine what you go through every single day. And I know that, like, sorry is kind of a lame thing to say, but I am. I'm very sorry. And second, what I want to say is that as cliche or lame as this sounds, I just want to encourage you to not give up hope, because the journey that you're currently on is not an easy one. And I think that hope is, it's the only thing that gets us through these hard times. And I'm not saying that it's going to be easy to hold on to hope, because I feel like situations like the one that this girl's in, if we're looking at it through the eyes of someone who loves her, this shit just breaks you down until you have nothing left to give, and then they steamroll right over the top of you. And somehow, through all of that, you're expected to just keep going with your life. And I don't know how you do that. I think it has a lot to do with love. And it's frustrating because assholes like myself, we come in and we say shit like, you're enabling them. Like, can't you see what's going on here? But we don't get it. Like, from the outside looking in, we can't fathom everything that you're going through. But we need to learn to shut our mouths and open our ears and our hearts. And I'm sorry that me personally, I've not been doing that. Like, I know what we all want to do is we all want to help. Like, we want to be helpful to this situation. But I think that the best help we can give to those who have a loved one struggling is to just listen and be there for them when they need us while keeping our mouths shut. And I'm sharing this advice for myself, but if it applies to you, then take it. But me personally, I am working very hard on trying to keep my mouth shut more. So that's it. That's what I wanted to say. Okay. This week's secret: how my narcissistic ex got me addicted to heroin, part 2.
Eventually, one of my friends from work, he, like, doesn't show up, and, like, we're calling him or whatever, And then the other girl that I used to use with goes, "Girl, I fucking got him some brown." That's what we used to call it, brown. And I'm like, "Oh, fuck." And he's not answering, and he's no call, no showing, and he never does that. So he lives right down the road, and we drive there, and we can see him in the window, and he's laying on his bed naked, and he's not moving. And her and I kick down the door, and he's fucking dead. Overdose from doing heroin that she got him. So
In that moment when you see him laying there, like, what the hell is going through
I
your
could see
mind?
him through the window, and I was pretty sure that he was dead, but he didn't, because the way I could see him was his head was towards the window, but like I couldn't see his face. So I could see his, like, basically from his like penis down, because he was naked. But then I was thinking, what if he is not? Like, what if he's overdosing, like right now, you know? I didn't know he had been dead for 2.5 days. I didn't know that then, because this was like a Monday, right? So he had died over the weekend or whatever. She got him the drugs like that weekend. But turned out that he had been dead for like 2 days. But in my mind, I'm thinking he could be alive. And his house was like clean, like everything looked put together around him. So I was like confused, you know? And I just wasn't sure. I was pretty sure he was dead, but I wanted to be sure, because what if he was shallow breathing and I could have saved his life? So we bust down the door, and the smell, instantly I knew that he was passed, because you could smell it.
When you realize that he's dead, do you just freak out?
Yeah, I start crying. It's just scary, you know? It's like, because he really hadn't done that much, because he, I guess, was like into pills. And I mean, this is not a close friend, so I didn't know him super well, but it was like we had kind of just started hanging out. He hung out with the other chick more, and I lived in a town away from them, and I used to commute into that town for work. Well, they were like lived really close, so she would hook him up with drugs, and then, you know, he would like buy her a little bit for doing it. So it was crazy, and it was so fucked for her, because she felt responsible, like she had killed him because she had hooked him up with the drugs, and she was a good friend of mine. So it was just a very fucked up situation. It was scary. And we called the cops. We called the cops as soon as we saw him in the window.
Is there, I don't know how this works, but could she have gotten in trouble at all for, I mean, obviously, if
Maybe
they.
if we would have told, but I never told.
Okay.
And she never told. But then we went back to work and got pulled into the manager's office, and it all imploded. Like, "We know you guys are using," and I was like, "No." And sorry, I skipped over this part. I had gone to my manager at one point and told the truth. Like, "I have a problem with pills and I need to take some time off to get clean." And I did get clean for a couple weeks. And then when I came back, I just instantly re-triggered back into it. And so he already kind of knew my shit and was really cool and like being there for me and stuff. But then it was like I just couldn't handle it, and I got fired. Everything just imploded, and I got fired that day.
My only real experience with drug users is from the show Intervention. And I know that, like, a lot of times, just being in a certain routine, like with work, like, so even though, because you were clean when you left work, you came back, you got right back into it. It's like when you're seeing the same people and you're doing the same things and you're passing by the same places over and over again, it's hard then to try and quit.
Yeah. And I had said before, like, because my mom knew I was struggling so bad with the drugs and stuff, I just told her, like, I can't get clean here. Like, I just can't, you know, I can't. And I knew that I couldn't work there if I wanted to be clean. And I tried to come back and it fucked me. After that, I didn't want to be with my boyfriend. Couldn't stand him. I was like repulsed by him. And he had actually, like, right before all that shit had happened, we had gotten in a fight and he was like coming at me, you know, like flinching at me, like, what the fuck are you gonna do? Like, pretend like he was gonna hit me. And I had a straightener in my hand, like a hair straightener, and I was holding it by the string and I swung it at him and I hit him with it. Like, I don't know where, like in the back or the side or something. And he had punched previously this picture that was like, it had glass and it was above the bed. And so this is like all in the fight. So there was glass all over the bed. And then after that, he like saw red and he grabbed me by the back of the head and he shoved my face into the bed with all the glass all over it. It was like suffocating me. I thought he was going to kill me. And there was like just glass being pushed into my face. I just left or whatever. And then like a couple days later, that shit happened with the guy from work. And then after that, I was like, I want to move home.
I know that you had said that you grew up with your dad and his drug struggles, but you didn't like grow up seeing these kinds of things.
Absolutely not. I had a super normal childhood, besides the fact that my dad left when I was young, but I had a stepdad that was awesome, and my mom had her shit together, and no. I got good grades. I was a cheerleader. I was good. Like, my life was normal when I was young.
And, like, what goes through your mind when you find yourself in these situations that, like, they're so far from the environment in which you were raised? You know what I'm saying?
It's hard to say, honestly. It's really hard for me to put it into words because it's like I was one person and then I met my first ex that I spoke about and every part of me just deteriorated. And I felt like I was color before, and then this whole period of my life I was gray and now I'm color again, you know, to like for a visual reference. Like, I just couldn't. I was so detached from who I was. Like, at that point, honestly, like, being abused or treated like shit was pretty normal to me at that point. And my whole thing was like, well, I guess I shouldn't have tried to hit him with that straightener, and maybe I wouldn't have got my face shoved into a pile of glass and suffocated. So, you know, I just was really broken. And eventually that all kind of came to a head and I moved home. Because I had gotten fired, I was able to collect unemployment. And I stayed in my room, not even lying, for a whole year. I would leave every Thursday when I would get paid. The second boyfriend would pick me up, take me to get heroin. I would come home, thanks, drop me off. That was like our whole relationship. And he'd be like, I love you. And I'm like, I don't care. And I just didn't fucking want to be with him. I hated him. I hated myself. I stayed in my room for a year and I would take my heroin. I would divide it into 6 days, and I would smoke heroin all day enough to where I couldn't feel. And I would just beg God every night to just kill me. I fucking hated my life. I was so depressed. I felt so worthless. I just couldn't handle it anymore. I just wanted to die. Like, I would just pray for an overdose. I would pop pills on pills on pills. I mean, I would muscle relaxers and Klonopin. Klonopin's like a Xanax and muscle relaxers. I would take like 30 each and then smoke heroin and go to sleep and just, and be so like, this is it, I'm done. And then I'd wake up in the morning and be angry that I had another fucking day to live on the earth, because I was so fucked up and so broken and I needed help so bad.
During this time, is your family just, I mean, everyone at this point is completely aware of what's going on. It's hard to try and explain away why you're in your room.
Everybody thought that I was taking Suboxone, which is like a thing that they give you to help you with addiction. And I was getting a prescription for Suboxone and I would just trade it for heroin. So I'd get paid and then I would take my Suboxone and I'd go to the dealer and get shit. But my mom knew that I was insanely depressed and she would cry outside my door and beg me to come out and beg me to shower and beg me to eat, and I wouldn't do it. So I'd go on like that for almost a year, and it's the most miserable time of my entire life. Like, I can't even begin to explain to you the amount of despair that I had. It was just really hard. And eventually I just come clean, like, yeah, I'm still using, and I go to detox. So do you know what detox is?
Isn't it like the medical way of helping you kind of get off of drugs? Like, they give you IVs, yeah, and make it
easier. You go there for a week and they give you like pills and shit to help you like come down, that like make the withdrawal easier. Because at this point, I'm not using, like, I'm never using enough to get high. I'm only using enough to be numb. Unless I had like the extra to like add on to it, I would get really fucked up. But it was really because I just wanted to die. Like, I didn't care about using drugs anymore. I was like over it. Like, I'm sick of this. Like, I'm sick of lying. I'm sick of feeling shameful. I'm sick of feeling guilty. But like, I knew that I needed mental help, like mental health professional, I didn't really feel like I needed drug rehab. I felt like I needed mental rehab because I was so just like fucked up. But so I go to detox, and eventually this is so fucking embarrassing. I meet a guy while I'm in there that I actually really like. And I get out of detox and the dude comes and picks me up and my mom's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, I can't be here, because he lived far away. And she did not believe me. I went to his house and I stayed clean for 2 months. Him and I both did. And I felt so good, so much better. Well, he had to go to jail on an old charge and like do 30 days or something. And he was like, I want to use just one more time before I have to go in.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Listening to you tell this story, I can't even imagine what it's like to have a family member who you care for go through this. I don't even know you. You are a complete stranger. Like, I know a tiny little picture of you, and I feel in my entire body frustrated just even hearing the beginning of this part of the story.
Yeah. So we go back and forth for like a week on it. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. Because he is an IV user. So he shoots it up. And I'm like, well, I just won't do it after he goes to jail and I can't shoot myself up. I never could do it myself. So he shoots it up and he shoots me up with it and it's on. It's like, oh my, I hadn't had it in a long time. It's a huge dose, right to the face, feels fucking amazing. It's like an orgasm, but better. And eventually, like a couple days later, he gives me too much. And this is just a secondhand story of what I heard from him, but I slump over, my lips turn blue, I go purple. And next thing I know, I'm waking up in the shower to cold water on me and him banging on my chest and slapping me in the face. Apparently, I like almost died because he gave me too much. So that happens.
When you woke up from that, were you scared or no?
No, I couldn't feel. You can't feel when you have that much drugs running through your body. You can't feel anything. Like, you feel your body, but you can't feel emotion. So anyways, eventually I go back home and I'm trying to be clean. I really am, because I knew I had wanted to, but I'm not doing well. I'm having night terrors like every other night, dreams about my first ex. I am not doing well. I'm depressed. I have a new relationship eventually. I mean, and I can barely have sex. I can't be touched. I mean, somebody would like grab me from behind and I would like flinch and think that I was about to get my ass kicked. It was like, I just was not in a good place. So I start therapy, and that's like going, but I'm like kind of one foot in and one foot out. And at this point, I'm in a relationship with my now husband, who I had a relationship with before my very first ex. So he like knows that I'm struggling, but I'm like trying. I'm really fucking trying, you know? And he was my first love, and we had dated for 5 years before we broke up, and then I got with this first guy who fucked me up, and he loved me and I loved him, and I knew that I always wanted to be with him, but I was like, I was not in a good place. But he was really like trying to help me get out of it. It was like I would be clean for like a month, and then I would use once, and then it was like everything was just boiling over, but it was my mental health. Because being clean was not hard for me. It was feeling emotion that was so hard. And then also being like wrapped up in still having ties to that shitty life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to live a good life, but I still got people messaging me on Facebook or texting me, or like, you know, running into people that you know. And it's really hard. It was like I was trying so hard to like figure it out. And eventually I have been like taking Suboxone a lot, and then I found out that I'm pregnant.
Oh shit.
And I just stopped. I never did it again. And I haven't touched anything in that way ever since. It's so hard to describe to people who have like a very typical addiction where you're like you're powerless to the drug. You can never say no. You steal for it. You lie for it. You do anything for it, you know, and then you have to go to AA forever, and you can never even have a drip of alcohol or else you'll be back doing heroin. It's not like that for me. I had a surgery like a year after my child was born, and I had to take Vicodin for like 6 months, and I never once overtook it. I didn't even take it every day. The doctor would like, oh, do you want 40 more? And I'd be like, dude, you just gave me 40 last week. And then she'd be like, oh, sorry. Like, and I just stopped taking it. Like, it has no effect over me, but I like healed my mental health, and I healed from the trauma of my first relationship and all the shit that was to follow. And I was talking to my mom not that long ago, and she's like, she still doesn't know a lot, but then she, you know, like bringing up, I just still can't believe you would ever be a stripper. It's just so disgusting to me and so disappointing to me. And I finally just was like, you know, you don't even fucking know what you're talking about. I didn't want to be a stripper. I was in a fucking abusive relationship. He made me do that. And she was like, oh, I didn't know that. And I'm like, yeah, like I didn't fucking want to do that shit. But I was being fucking manipulated. I was in a bad way, you know? And then we talked about a couple other things, and she's like, I just realized I've always looked at you as a recovered addict, because I always get really irritated when my mom brings it up. Like, she'll say, like, I'm just so proud of how far you come and that you don't use drugs anymore. And I'm like, can you shut up about it? I don't want to hear that anymore. I don't want to talk about it. It's behind me. She's like, well, I don't understand why you don't want to be proud of it. And then she said to me, I realize now you don't look at yourself as a recovered addict. You look at yourself as like a domestic violence survivor. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I kind of do. Like, I don't, the ability for me to just shut it off and never do it again was so easy, which I don't think is typical with most drug addicts. But I think the reason that I was using all started in a weird way, and it all became wrapped up in him. And the control and the, I don't know, it was like I started for the wrong reasons, and then it just took me over and I couldn't stop it. And even as much as I wanted to, like I said earlier, I stopped doing the drugs started doing me, and then it became wrapped up in my mental health, and everything kind of became one. And I don't know, it's something very difficult to put into words, but I don't have any temptation to like use drugs at all. Like, I can drink a beer and I don't want to like go do heroin. I could take Vicodin after I had my surgery and it didn't affect me at all. Like, I don't know, it was so weird. It's almost like that 5.5 years, 6 years was just like a blur. Like just a little hiccup in time.
Can I try and decipher this a little bit? And I mean, I'm totally just shooting my shot here.
Yeah.
Do you think that during that time you fell so far that you completely lost any self-worth or any idea that you had purpose or that you could give anything to the world? Like, you just kind of thought of yourself as absolutely this sack of dog shit, really. And
absolutely.
And when you got pregnant, I think maybe what happened was this light went off in you and you're like, holy shit, like, I'm going to be a mom. Like, I'm bringing someone into the world. I'm going to have someone in the world who is dependent on me for life and taking care of them. And like, I hate myself. Maybe that gave you the motivation, and not necessarily motivation to quit. I 100% hear what you're saying, but maybe it gave you the insight to realize, hey, like, I am worth something.
Yeah, I think it was like that purpose. I felt like I was always so worthless. Like, I didn't, you know, I had such negative self-talk, which I realize now I was conditioned in my first relationship because that's how he talked to me every day for 2 years and 5 months. It was like, I just hated myself so much, but I always loved other people. I always would cry and feel so much shame and sadness and guilt for putting my family through shit because I loved them so much. And so then all of a sudden it was like, I'm 5 weeks pregnant, but I like love my child. And it was like, okay, never doing that again. And I never did. It was just like, I don't know, like the switch just flipped and it was easy. But then I still had a lot of shit I still had to work through, which I did, you know, a lot through my pregnancy and then the first couple years. But I did it, you know, I did a lot of fucking therapy, so much therapy. But, you know, I had a lot of issues. Sex was so difficult for me in the first like couple years of my relationship because I don't know, like I couldn't do anything that made me feel victimized. You know what I mean? Like don't tell me what to do in bed. Don't touch me the wrong way. Like, it's got to be exactly how I want it, because it was like, I just was really fucked up from that. Then I had, so much therapy dealing with the fact that I never considered the things that happened to me actual abuse, because they weren't like a movie theater rape. I didn't get attacked in an alley and pinned on the ground and forcibly raped. I blamed myself. I said it wasn't that bad. I, even still, something that I struggle with is ever considering myself a victim. I still struggle with that. I know that the things he did to me were awful, and then that, it's just like, I don't know. It was hard. And
even earlier, when you told me the story, you said he didn't rape me. Like, when you were talking about your ex-boyfriend in the garage, and I'm like, well, that, I don't think rape has to be
penetration by a penis.
Exactly. And so I think when you said that, I thought, this sounds a lot like fucking rape to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that sometimes people go through stuff, and then if it, you know, you don't want to like be like, oh, woe is me, because people have it worse. And then you feel like you're being like stupid or whatever, you know, like a lot of people feel that way. And I think that even I feel that way at times. Another huge reason that I felt so, like, I felt like I had such a hard time accepting the abuse and like admitting it to myself was because I saw him a few times over the years after I had already split up with him. Because at one point he was stalking me. So he would like sit outside my house. So like we were together, he was doing pills, oxys, and then I guess sometimes heroin. And then he got into meth as well after we split up. So he became crazy, and I had to get like a restraining order on him. That was like scary, but I would still talk to him and he would message me and I would write him back, and I had a restraining order against him. And sometimes if I couldn't get stuff, he would hook me up. I would feel really guilty about it, but I was very like addicted to him. And then I saw him once, it was like in a pawn shop, and he came in and I like hid behind the other wall, and my heart was beating so fast and I was afraid of him. But then not that much longer after, I went and saw him, and I hadn't seen him in probably like a year. And I picked him up and fucked him in the car. And then we go back to this hotel that he had, so he didn't have a fucking place to live. And I'm so stupid for this. I'm there with him, and he like buys me pills, and he's like smoking, or no, not smoking, he's shooting meth and heroin mixed together. He's all fucked up or whatever. And he like, so then we have sex, right? And like, I'm on top, and I don't know, he's kind of starts to like do the like whole dirty talk thing, you know, like being kind of like rough, but not like that or whatever, you know, like pretty like normal rough, where you like do a little light hair pull and then an ass smack. And all of a sudden, a switch flips and he smacks me in the face and spits in my face and pushes me off him in the middle of us having sex. And I saw him again one other time after that.
Okay, but you know what? Here's the thing. And I don't want you to sit here and say like, you know, I was so stupid, or I was an idiot, or like, how could I have been tricked by
I know it's because he had this weird psychotic hold over me because of our relationship, But I still feel so fucking stupid. And there is no greater disrespect, I feel like, than somebody spitting in your face after they had just been saying, like, oh, I love you so much. I'm so glad that you're here. I've missed you, blah, blah, blah. You're the true love of my life. And then he spits in my face. And then afterwards, I, like, cry. And he's like, oh, I thought you liked it rough. And then just walks away from me.
But you used to do drugs and have these horrible withdrawals and throw up, and you would still go back to them. It's the same thing, you know, like you were addicted to him. And so the way that I'm kind of mapping this out in my head is that you had talked earlier how you didn't feel like you were really addicted to the drugs. It was more like the drugs were a means to numb out the pain from the emotional and physical and abuse that you were dealing with. So, you know, if you're telling me you weren't addicted to the drugs, then I want to tell you, I think that you were addicted to him.
I do.
He was what that addiction was. So, you know, you were like, I could leave the drugs. That wasn't the hard thing for me. It was leaving him. And even the therapy that you did after you got clean was still all surrounding him. So don't call yourself stupid and don't think that you were making these terrible mistakes because you were legit an addict.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is true. All the therapy that I did do, I never really talked about my drug use because it was all secondary. It was all just like, you know, like something that came with the relationship with him, and everything was about him. Like all my therapy was breaking through all the stuff that we had been through and the things that he had put me through. And then it's like, even when I was in my second relationship, and all I could think about was him, you know, like he would still message me and like I would still talk to him sometimes. And you know, the second boyfriend would get really jealous and be like, I don't want you to fucking talk to him. He's a piece of shit or whatever. And I would just look at my head like, you just don't understand. Like, because he was just such like an intoxicating person. He was so interesting. He was so many things. And he was so manipulative. And it was just like so... He was also scary. I was also very scared of him. Oh, I forgot to tell you as well. He had already gone to prison for attempted murder before.
Oh, God, Jesus. He was a real shining star.
Oh, God. Just a gem. And now I look back and I'm like, huh? Oh, and it does make me feel better. He's like the ugliest person on earth. He's so gross now.
So, he honestly was probably just as ugly back then, but you were just like saw him through a different lens.
Yeah, true.
I have a question for you, and I hope that it's not too much to ask, but okay, so you had a baby, and that baby is what really kind of pushed you to getting sober and healthy and living a better life.
Mm-hmm.
If we, let's say down the road that baby finds themselves 18 in this abusive relationship, abusing drugs and going down the same path that you did, what did you need to happen? What did you need people to do? Like, anyone done to kind of step up for you and get you out of this? Or is it only something you can do for yourself?
Well, I had said multiple times I needed to move. Like I had to have physical distance. That was the only way. And there was nowhere for me to go. And I'm imagining that if my child was in a relationship that was just like that, knowing what I know, I would ship her off to live with somebody else, or I would move. I would literally move, because like I would do something, you know, like I would send her to a treatment far away. I mean, it depends too, though. It's like, is it because is she in this position because she's more addicted to the drugs, or is it the guy? You know what I mean? And for me, it was the guy. And just being away from the guy would have made all the difference. Because there was at one point in our relationship, like in between the stripping and the sexual abuse, where my now husband, because like I said, we had dated when we were young, my mom had called him and he came and picked me up. And I didn't touch a drug for 2 months. And I went and lived with him in a different state. And I cried the whole drive home. And he's like, you can't stay here anymore. Like, I have to take you home. And I was like, I can't. If I go home, he'll get me again. I know it. 2 days later, I was back at his house. And I begged him not to take me home. I was like, I can't. I think environment is so huge. Like, I think that it's so hard for people to get out of a cycle when they see the same things over and over again. You're doing the same stuff. You're seeing the same shit. You see the same people. It's like, I couldn't. My, like I said, crazy ex lived in my neighborhood. My parents still own the same house. And I was only 2 blocks away. So every time I would try to get away, he's 2 blocks down the road. I couldn't escape him. It was like, so I think that would be a huge thing, like getting away from it just until you can get strong. And therapy, mental health help. And I also think that one of the biggest things was that my mom kept thinking that I was making the choice to be shitty. I don't think she stopped to see that maybe I was in a situation I didn't know how to get myself out of. And so she kept harping on me. And it would kind of drive me closer to him in that way. Because I would be upset that she would make me feel so guilty. And then he would use that as an opportunity to manipulate me, you know, and comfort me and get what he wanted. So, not that I don't think that you should do tough love. I totally think that. But I also think in the beginning, maybe trying to like, I think if my mom would have pried it out of me, she could have got it out of me. But I think that she was just so focused on the drug part and less about the boyfriend and not really realized what was going on in that relationship. So,
here's my question.
I feel like I kind of got off track on like a tangent
no,
there.
No. It's such a good tangent because where I'm looking at this is I see two problems. I see number one, the problem is how do we get somebody clean for long enough that we can even start to work on the mental health aspects of things? Because
yeah,
I don't think a lot of people who abuse drugs are just like, yeah, I just love drugs. I think they're all dealing with trauma in their life. And then my second question or my second problem is people who abuse drugs, they don't open up. They know how to live a life of secrecy. Like they are so good at compartmentalizing and hiding, manipulating, all this stuff. It's like
isolating.
How do we get them in a place where we can actually get them to be vulnerable, to open up, to kind of try and help that trauma or heal those past wounds?
Oh, that's such a loaded question. I honestly, I don't really think I have the answer.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I think that is the question that we need to be asking ourselves, because I do think a lot of times when you have somebody that you're close to who has a drug problem, you want to try and fix the drug problem. And I think that you're absolutely right. Like, we need to be focusing on this other element of what's happening. But it's, I see the problems in that. It's how do we actually get to that point?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's so hard. And I think that it's really hard because everybody's road there and their journey is like so different, and their reasons and, you know, their traumas and everybody's path is just so different from one another's, and it's not a one size fits all, you know? So it's like, as much as people want to like find a way to help everybody, it's not a one size fits all. So something that will work for one person won't work for the other.
Exactly. And I think that there are these elements of also having to recover from the guilt of the things you did for the drugs, for you stripping.
Oh, that is the hardest things to overcome, the guilt and shame. And that is a huge reason why people continue, because like I said, drugs make you forget. It's like the strongest fucking antidepressant you can get. So you feel like shit. I mean, nobody goes, oh, you know what? I think I want to do heroin because I really want to be a heroin addict. It never happens that way. They meet somebody and try something. Usually they start with a pill or whatever it might be. And then all of a sudden it's like, what the fuck just happened? And then they just feel like shit. Because they're like, how the fuck did I get here? How did I let myself get here? How did this happen? And then, but then a lot of the times they're coming with pre-existing bullshit. So they do the drug and they're like, wow, I feel so good. And a lot of it's because they're already struggling with depression or, you know, trauma or whatever. And for the first time in a long time, they don't feel those negative emotions. Because the drugs make your body feel so good, you really mix that up with feeling good in your mind. But your mind isn't good. It's not improving your mental health or your trauma. You just don't feel the negative things and your body feels good. So you like, it tricks your mind into thinking that like you feel better. You know what I mean? It's like somebody who's depressed, you give them something like an opiate and then they feel better. It's not treating their depression whatsoever. It's actually just making it worse. And it's making their chemical imbalance fucked up, because it does. When you do opiates, your serotonin and all that shit gets totally fucked up. So when you don't have it, your lows are 10,000 times lower than when you were just regularly depressed, because your mind can't refill those receptors. Like your chemicals cannot rebalance the same way. So it's just like it creates this totally fucked cycle that is so hard to get out of, because then all of a sudden you go, I never meant to be a drug addict. You try to stop doing the drugs. You feel worse than when you started. And then you add on top of it opiate withdrawal or whatever withdrawal, which is hell on earth. I mean, talk about feeling like shit. So now all you want to do is be like, I'm suicidal every time I'm not on it, or I feel like I want to die because I'm depressed as shit. My body feels like shit. I have nothing to live for anymore. I've let everybody fucking down. Everybody hates me. Everybody's ashamed of me. Everybody looks at me and looks at how fucking stupid I am. I can't show my face anymore anywhere. And then you just perceive yourself like that constantly. And it's just so hard to get out of. Because trust me, any drug addict that you might think is being a selfish piece of shit hates themselves 7,000 trillion times worse than you hate them in that moment. 7 million times worse. It's like there's no lonelier place in your heart and in your soul than when you've let everybody down around you and you feel powerless and you don't know how to get yourself out. But I think something that a lot of people don't understand about drugs and opiates in particular is that, like I said, if you go in and you're already struggling mentally, because it fucks with your chemicals and your brain so bad that when you don't have it, you do feel 7 million times worse than when you first started. So trying to get off of it is not just returning back to where you were before. It's going 10,000 steps down and trying to get just back up to the shitty part where you were before so you can start going forward from there. It's really hard. And when you're struggling mentally, the feelings can become so overwhelming, the emotions so overwhelming. And for me, the trauma emotions and the bullshit that I dealt with my ex, it was, I mean, I couldn't, I like could not wrap my head around it. And I had so much guilt and self-blame and I couldn't validate myself, and but then I would be angry with him, but then I would feel stupid for going back. And then it was like, I had so many fucked up emotions, and I would try for a month, and I would just be crying all the time, and I would just feel bad all the time and depressed all the time and not want to be alive anymore. And then it was, you know, and then all of a sudden, bing, your phone popped up and somebody's like, hey, you want to get high? It's like, then it would all go away. And then you know, you're fucking yourself. You know, you're going to start all the way back over, but you're just in pain. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think
and you just want to turn it off.
I think that for a lot of us who have never been in your shoes, but we have someone around us who is going through these things, it's hard for us to understand. It's impossible for us to really get the empathy that they need because we don't understand it.
Yeah, and you have to remember too that you're seeing a snapshot of them, right? So you're the person you know who does heroin. You see them and you're like, wow, their whole life just revolves around heroin, but you don't see the fact that they might be secretly selling their body, or they might be, you know, trying to kill themselves and wishing for a fucking overdose every night, or they might have gone through trauma, or they might, you know, there's like all this other side that's internalized within them that people on the outside don't get to see or feel. So it can be really hard for people who are struggling mentally to get out of it. And I think that people need to remember too that there's a story behind it. And look, my story evolved to become fucked up and fucked up and fucked up the more that I did it. And then it kept me in the cycle. So it's like, you know, it's not necessarily just like that one trauma when you're a child, but sometimes you start, it sounds appealing, you do it, it's masking that, and then all of a sudden more traumas come about while you're in it. And then, and you don't talk about it, especially not men, let me tell you that. If they're feeling shit because they've been going through shit, it's like, they don't talk about it. I know for a fact that my first ex at one point, like towards the end of his addiction, I'm pretty sure he's clean now. I don't know. But I had seen him one time and he had told me that he sucked dude's dick for money a couple times. Imagine the fucked up things he's going to feel when he's sober, knowing that he did that. You know what I mean? It's like, guys don't want to talk about that shit. So I don't know. It's hard though, because then I also have like the part of me that's like, okay, well just get your shit together, because I was able to just do that. Like I was able to just stop, but I had such a powerful reason. So I know that it's not like that for everybody. So.
I think for a lot of people too, though, like I said, I watch Intervention and there's tons of people on there who have kids, and that's just, it's not enough reason for them. But honestly, like I really, really appreciate you talking. Like, yeah, you said at the beginning, like, I'm not super emotional when it comes to it. I'm really glad that you weren't, because I feel like in this interview, it's, you lay it out in school. I always like teachers who can break it down and make it really simple. And I feel like you did that. Mm-hmm. Like, you showed me narcissism. You showed me how far, like, it went. And I felt like I have this moment where it really clicked, like, holy shit. Like, I thought I understood narcissist, and then you tell me that and I'm like, oh shit, that's way more than what I ever thought, you know. And talking about drug abuse, just the way that you talk about it and this mental health aspect, like I don't think I'd ever really thought about that. No, that's not true, because I do know that, like, with the person that we know who is on heroin, like I tried at one point, like, talking to him, not talking about the drug aspects of it, just talking about, like, you know, what is the shit that, like, you're dealing with? And, like, someone like me, I'm very in tune with my emotions and feelings, and I can always put what I'm feeling into words. A lot of people can't do that. And it's almost like, you know, you have to, like, you don't want to set them up and be like, are you feeling this way because of this? But sometimes you kind of want to guide them and be like, you know, could this be a reason yeah. why you're feeling this way, because they physically cannot do it themselves. I want to end this interview with one little tidbit from you. I want to end it on a happy note. I want to know where you're at now in life and how everything is going.
I mean, my life could not be better. I mean, I am married and my husband's the fucking most amazing, sexiest man alive. And he treats me like a fucking queen. I am so in love with him. And my child is amazing. I'm so thankful that I found out that I was pregnant so early. Thank the Lord. She's the shit. And she's so funny. And yeah, I mean, we're successful. And I just am like totally, it's funny because if I meet new people, they have no idea. Like only my old friends from back in the day know anything that's ever happened, because I am like the most put together and have their shit together person you'll ever meet on the planet. Like all my drawers are organized. My house is clean at all times. Like I eat healthy and meal prep and I go to the gym and I have this like super atypical like personality, and people are like, you used to do what? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's like, I don't think people realize like you can come through a shitty relationship, you know, that totally fucks your whole sense of being and existence, and totally still be happy in the future. Like it doesn't have to define your whole path, you know what I mean? And like my life is amazing and I'm so happy. I hope that if somebody listens to it and they're in a relationship with someone who's a fucking asshole narcissist, that they realize like can see it and can tell somebody, because I was also very alone in it and I never talked about it. Tell somebody and get out so that they can find somebody that treats them amazing. That it's indescribable how much happier you can be with somebody who's normal and who's good, you know, and kind.
In the story before this story, we heard about a baby who came into this world very unexpectedly, but who served a very big purpose. And then today, we hear about another baby who came in and really helped this woman to get her life back on track. Now, please do not confuse my words with having a baby will solve everything, because I promise you that is not what I believe at all. People with broken marriages having a baby with the sole intention of trying to fix things, that's stupid. But what I'm trying to say is this. We all have moments of feeling small or worthless, or feeling like we are just taking up oxygen that somebody who is actually doing something with their life could be using. Maybe that's just me, but if you've ever felt that way, just know that you serve a purpose here. And we can't always see it in the moment, but just know that maybe you are to someone what these unexpected babies were to their parents. I don't know. Like, maybe I'm making no sense. Maybe I'm just rambling, but I just hope that you see the value that you can bring to those in need. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. I will see all of you next week.
Everybody has a secret.